I'm going to first read an essay that I wrote back in September 29th, 1992. At the time, I was working for Plaza Community Center. I was pretty tuned into the world of football americano, norteamericano, the rough and ready football teams that were like clashes of armies with line-to-line contact, and a quarterback that has the ball that's either handed off after the linemen have made a clear path, or used as a missile thrown to an end or some other eligible receiver. I guess I really don't have to describe this, but football mania, I guess you call it, as a Mexicano raised in Austin, Texas, Norte Americano, I have a, how should I say, profoundly convinced that football instituted in the middle school, high school, and the high school, and then on to the university, particularly in Austin, in my era, which was actually 1940, when I became aware of the option of being able to get involved in football, in the neighborhood of 7th and Chicon, as I pointed out in some of my essays, there was a large, large country block, two by one, I guess you would say, one block by two, and next to it was the gin mill. And then on the other end was an old railroad house, round, kind of looked like a, some kind of a hut, large hut in Africa. It was amazing area. Right next to it, about 24 yards, was a chinaberry tree. It also served as a post for the people bringing in horses, mostly from their wagons, the wagons that they used to bring in cotton already picked to be taken to the gin mill, and operated by a just incredible man. He knew a great deal about a lot of things, and when he wasn't too engaged in making horseshoes or shoeing, whatever, he would even sit down and talk to us and tell us stories, you know. But as we grew older, we became absorbed or focused in using elote, playing football, not only on the morning of Thanksgiving Day, which was the big day, the big clash between University of Texas and what's the name of the country college down south, A&M, who at least during the World War years, became powerful because people who otherwise would have gone to other universities that were not military, ending up in Texas A&M, they were attracting soldiers and training officers, and they were getting a lot of play. Whereas University of Texas was like an island of liberalism and idealism, and it had wonderful museum, not museum, but Colosseum. Well, I had museums and statues, but University of Texas, which had a number, had many more students. Texas A&M students were, well, to make it short, they had the best team during the war years, and which made us suffer because we had become full-fledged addicts in terms of paying attention to what happens to our precious Texas Longhorns. Another thing, too, that, well, never mind why. But so football in my lifetime became what I consider the, you know, powerful assimilating activity. For Mexico, there was a precedence of football, of course, in the form of soccer, and which is just distinctly very different than any sports fan knows. What's really interesting is how by the time I was, let's say, my generation and the younger generations that also fell in love with football, reached an incredible climax, I think, in Los Angeles, because there were many of us that lived in Los Angeles that just really, really loved the Oakland Raiders, especially after they obtained this quarterback who had been the star quarterback from Stanford. He, I don't have his name immediately, but a lot of people would know who I'm talking about. Later on, I'll have to put it in here. By the 80s was just an incredible year. We were showing up as participants on the field, but not in a very limited, because somehow or the other, so many of the football players never quite continued to turn into football stars. I suppose the economics and physicality and the newness of that sport in terms of the Mexican culture, or other things, discrimination, although I shouldn't use that word unless I'm prepared to point out in what ways it was expressed. Maybe I can at some point. At the Austin High School, Maroons had just wonderful teams also during my teenage years, or even a little before, being that it was the only high school in the great city of Austin, which grew also from the surrounding areas, as long as they weren't too far away, because otherwise they would have their own high school. I just remember Austin High School being already, by the time I attended in 1947-48, pretty crowded. Surely the size of the Americanos, the sangre europea from the immigrants from Europe who became the majority, the owners of the country, I guess you could say. Therefore, and I remember every game I went to and how exciting it was that we'd go even into games in San Antonio because of the big high school rivalries with Maroons and then Jefferson and it really meant a lot to the student body. I was very peripheral, I have to admit, but still, I was there, I witnessed it. Well, what I'm leading to, I suppose, is, in fact, I just remembered, I wrote this article the date, 9/29/92. Well, that sounds like a lucky number. 9/29/92. A full house. Nines and twos. I love poker too. That is more passion. Madness. Anyway, this article is called Overkill in Irwindale. The Oakland Raiders had become Los Angeles Raiders, and they were playing other games at the Los Angeles Coliseum, where USC soundly thrashed UCLA fairly often. And so that meant it was a place of football that we already knew about. So it began to draw enormous crowds because it had not only it had the quarterback Tom Flores in the I can't remember his name. It's not a Spanish. Plunkett. What a nice man. He not only was a great quarterback, but he had excelled in academics and from Stanford. Man, Stanford, people need to know, it's not how should I say, for people who are not prepared for academics and achievement. It's considered the Harvard of the West, and they would say it's the Harvard. So they would say that Stanford is that Stanford is Harvard's equivalent, I guess you would say. But I don't know whether it's just a lot of trivia that I'm doing, trying to get into the essence of this thing, so that, you know, I have enough background. I mean, the at this time, I would say that, at least in my circles, it's just generated a lot of involvement and identification. We really, as a whole, the Chicanos, Mexico Americanos, particularly those that were first or second, third generation, became enthusiastic fans. As I recall, even the guy that was doing the public relations was a Mexicano. So there you had it. You had Plunkett as the quarterback, and you had Tom Flores as the coach. And you had the voice of a Mexico Americano Latino as the public relations, but he really did a good job. Well, here we go. So this is, remember, if you can, those of you who might be able to identify with football American style, particularly in the early 90s, Overkill in Irwindale. In recent news, Al Davis's Raiders have reached an agreement with the Los Angeles Coliseum Commission, threatening to make them permanent as Los Angeles smog, traffic congestion, and drive-by shootings. It leaves little to cheer about. I just hope that the Oakland football fans who idolize the Raiders and are willing to sell bits and pieces of their souls keep them here. Don't think that they are the only ones that are being betrayed. We had the example of how the Oakland fan had been betrayed. Well, compared to Oakland, we have little reason to swallow or wallow in self-pity. The Oaklanders at least had a long-running love affair with their darling silver and white, silver and black. They experimented thousands of, they experienced thousands of thrills watching the Raider quarterback LaMonica, Stabler, and Plunkett connect to a whole parade of all-star passing receivers. And for several years, they were able to really feel powerful and invincible. Though the orgy of football fanaticism in Oakland became acknowledged as the bona fide city of state of California, Oakland Raiders fans can say that it was better to have loved and lost than to never have been loved, as in the case with the folks in and around Irwindale, who, alas, can now only view Al Davis as a trickster or whatever, who took their $10 million without giving them a smooch. Of course, the sweet and seductive Al Davis can't be blamed. He represents the spirit of capitalism personified. It was the Los Angeles Coliseum and their politicos such as state legislator Michael Ruth in the L.A. County, L.A. Councilman E. Bernardi, who squashed the city of Irwindale aspirations for big-time football in just about every way they knew how. The land on which the new football stadium in Irwindale was to be built was subjected to every kind of environmental impact study known to man, leaving questions about the survival of certain types of flora and fauna and whether there were Indian burial sites in the area. The reputations of Irwindale's financial and public relations consultants were ruined or besmirched. Irwindale politicians, most of which happened to be Mexican-Americans, dared to announce to the world that they were the elected officials of the California city that will probably never inspire for high office due to their folly. But none of these folks were more outrageously optimistic or more babosos, idiotic than yours truly. I really got carried away with a vision of a new Irwindale, momentum of the glorious days of the Los Angeles Raiders, coached by Tom Flores, Chicano quarterback and its premium quarterback, Chicano coach and its premium quarterback, Jim Plunkett, who was also a Chicano, really had a stupefying effect on me. Frankly, I got too ethnocentric. Even after Brodus retired, rather than to get fired, decided to get rich selling Coors beer and Hyundai cars to a franchise of the beer, and I guess the franchise of Honda cars. So after a good old Jim faded faster than General MacArthur after the Korean War, I continued to harbor dreams of Irwindale as Al Davis's Irwindale Raiders. I could see the shiny new stadium filled to the brim with nothing but Chicanos or Chicanada, because that would be the couldn't have been a better place for drawing from the so-called Latino community. When the Raiders played it Monday night, they played the whole country, actually, would have to acknowledge that we Chicanos exist. That would be good, wouldn't it? Good for our self-images, our psyche. Fortunately, as my wife Sarah says, God looks after fools and babies, and at least my babosadas haven't cost taxpayers $10 million. I've recovered from this football monomania, and I was left with a feeling of getting revenge, which is never a healthy thing. So I'd be just happy to see the residents of Irwindale sue, get their money returned, and perhaps sue the L.A. Coliseum Commission and their smart-ass politicians who represent the Los Angeles Colossus of the West, who are quick to give away former Chicano lands to baseball team owners and to build a new stadium at the expense of taxpayers, and yet have the nerve to yell loudest against a tiny little Chicano city that dares to dream housing football monarchy of Al Davis. Irwindale, I would think, would sue whatever they had to do to get their $10 million back, and perhaps sue another $10 billion for psychic wounds, for one overkill after another. After all, an overkill deserves another overkill. But, God, I was using strong language. What I meant, they doused it. They could have done it without even, saying anything. That's about it.